Welcome to Bergenomics, demystifying economics with Ross McDowell.
Welcome to a very concerning episode of Bergenomics, where we are going to demystify the economic effects of foot and mouth disease. I'm your host, Ross McDowell. Foot and mouth is a disease which can literally bring Australia's livestock industry to its knees. The highly transmissible disease is currently spreading through Bali, where 1.4 million Australian tourists travel back from each year. On their feet and in their luggage, those tourists are carrying an estimated 8.4 million shoes, any one of which could carry foot and mouth disease, potentially bringing a halt to more than $30 billion in income from our cattle export markets. Unconfined, the economic impact of foot and mouth disease could cost Australia $80 billion. Joining me today to explain the economic consequences of foot and mouth disease is Richard Norton. Richard is a leading agricultural figure, being the past CEO of Meat and Livestock Australia, and prior to that, CEO of Landmark. Richard, thanks for being my guest today.
Thank you, it's my pleasure.
Now, Richard, it's a scary thought. One shoe could stop $30 billion worth of exports.
It is, but that shoe would have to find its way into the into an animal. And I think Australia has been aware of biological incursions into our country, and it does have systems in place, and those systems now are being ramped up.
Now, recently, I was sitting at breakfast with a doyen of the cattle industry, Peter Homan, who is a guy that travels around Australia and at farm level is in touch with everybody. He was wringing his hands almost in fear of knowing what the result could be if this gets into Australia. Another close friend of mine, Tim Roberts Thompson, one of the owners of the largest Angus herds in Australia, said he's never seen a threat like this in the 40 years that he's been farming. So first of all, everybody's frightened about foot and mouth disease. Please tell me, what is foot and mouth disease?
Well, if I may, I'll reference my points from the World Organization for Animal Health. Foot and mouth disease, FMD, is a severe, highly contagious viral disease of livestock that has a significant economic impact. The disease affects cattle, swine, sheep, goats, and other cloven-hoofed ruminants. It is a transboundary animal disease that deeply affects the population of livestock and disrupting regional international trade of animals and animal products.
Okay, so as I understand it, when they get foot and mouth, they become ulcerated, they don't want to walk, they want to lie down, and so in terms of an economic consequence, farmer has a farm operation, he's trying to make money out of his cattle, sheep, milk, and the animals are no longer fit condition to be able to do that, let alone for their own survival. It's not a great situation to be in if that's your business.
Yeah, the issue with foot and mouth disease is that it's highly transmissible. So the virus survives in living tissue, urine and other, and the feces of infected animals. It can also survive in contaminated materials in the environment for several months under the right conditions, and that's the issue. It's known to have 60 subtypes of the virus, so that's why vaccination is not necessarily always the go-to strategy to address the virus when there is an outbreak.
Because a vaccination isn't one size fits all?
That's correct. So you have to determine the strain of the, so there's 7 known types and more than 60 subtypes. So understand what the strain is and then build the vaccine around that strain, which is still only 80% effective in a vaccination program.
Okay. And so looking at it's how contagious it is, from what I can see, it can last in a living bacterial or viral format for a month. So it can still affect animals after 1 month. It's transmitted by a whole range of things. Wild dogs, which asymptomatic toward it, as I understand, can spread it just through breath or by touch. Feral pigs, of which we have certainly a huge amount of in Australia, roaming free, they can spread it amongst all of the livestock. Farm equipment, vehicle tyres, cattle transport, farm machinery, all spread it, transport it. Even water, it survives in water. So it seems to be an extraordinarily difficult thing to be able to contain.
That's correct, and it's not something that is unknown to everyone in the Australian industry. That's why the Australian industry, you know, some decades ago now, nearly over 20 years ago now, put in for the beef industry lifetime traceability. So the National Livestock Identification System was put in place with individual animal traceability, where animals, particularly in the beef industry, and now it's being rolled out in the sheep industry, can be tracked and traced within hours on and off a property.
So explain that specifically. Every single piece of livestock has a number.
So in the beef industry, particularly when a calf is born, when the first opportunity comes around for that production system, they'll put a NLIS tag in its ear, and that's a radio frequency device. So when that animal is moved on or off the property, it's scanned, and that number is scanned and placed on the database of the processor, if it goes to a processor, on the database of the feedlotter, if it goes to the feedlotter, and if it goes to the sale yards, it's transferred onto the sale yards national property identification number, and then it goes on to a new buyer, transferred from the sale yards property identification number to the new buyer's property identification number. Now, all this was put in place for the worst case scenario of foot and mouth disease in Australia. So the industry and the government have known about these diseases coming into Australia and trying to protect the Australian system for some time. It's not as if investments haven't been made for such an incursion.
How effective would that system be then if the virus was to get into Australia and, let's say, it would appear at some geographic location? You're saying then that you can quantify where the risk may be geographically and shut it down.
That's exactly right. You know, there'd be a full investigation team come in. That team, if it went on property, it would be like in hazmat suits, as you could only imagine by some of the movies you've seen, what people would look like. The property would be effectively barricaded from entry in and out, so that there's no vehicles movement in and out of the property, and then the circle would just go around to neighbouring properties, trying to identify where else the disease may be, and then the circle will get larger. But in such a situation, one, it has to get into the country, and again, Australia's been living with foot and mouth disease in many countries that our tourists have travelled to in this situation, but it's as close as it's ever been, be it in Indonesia and be it in Bali, and Bali being such a large tourist destination. So it would really have to be someone, dare I say, not deliberately, but someone really messing up to get it back to a situation where it could be transferred to Australian farming systems. And then if that did happen, you know, the whole system then kicks into action. And I've been a part of industry, and as a part of industry, we did do scenario planning, real live situations of such an incursion around foot and mouth disease. So industry has invested heavily in ensuring that, you know, there are procedures in place for such an event.
Because at the moment, that doesn't come across, does it? And certainly in the media, it would appear that there's a scare campaign that is being raised that may be not realistic in terms of the threat, but also may not be realistic in terms of some of the effects.
Well, because it is scary. There's no doubt. It's catastrophic if we just get one incursion. So the whole focus has to be of keeping it out. But then I suppose a part of any organisation managing its risk, a country managing its risk, or industry managing its risk, I'm saying that industry for decades has managed or tried to manage its risk through these programs of individual animal traceability. because the reason why it is scary is because we then, there are only three categories of foot and mouth throughout the world. Either you don't have it and you are free of it, you have it and contain it with vaccination, or you have it. And that determines the health protocols for animal trade and meat trade across the world. It's very black and white, as those three categories are. So the issue for Australia would be, what are our trading partners going to think of that incursion if it happened in Australia? How long would a market, export market, be closed for? Would there be exceptions to those protocols to countries that may already have foot and mouth disease about taking Australian product? How many months would it take to renegotiate those protocols? All those things are in play if we do get it.
Okay, so as I understand it, we get one case, we lose our export of the affected products, being it cattle, sheep, beef, instantly?
We would have to declare that we are now not foot and mouth disease free. I think then that's when things kick into action, as I said, is containing it. And then through the transparency of I'm really comfortable that our industry has invested heavily to contain it. And that's why we have this discussion around vaccines being held overseas, no vaccines being held in Australia. Vaccine may not be the way to contain it, or even need it if it is contained. But vaccines are there in a bank for Australia if needed already. I believe a million doses. But what would happen is that, yes, you would immediately kick in and start renegotiating those health protocols with other countries. Now, you can go one of two ways. To a country that is FMM, foot and mouth disease free, they may say, no, we will renegotiate the health protocols over a period of time. Another country might go, well, we've got foot and mouth disease, we'll take your product. And this would all be playing out behind the scenes if such an incursion occurred in Australia. So it may be that some markets will continue to take the product and renegotiate the health protocols, and other markets would stop taking it.
Do you think that is your opinion? Do you think that is the case, that there would be some foot and mouth disease countries that would say, yes, we'll take Australia's product?
Well, the whole world is in, you know, there's a bit of a crisis around protein. Beef prices are extremely high globally. Lamb prices and sheep meat is in short supply globally. You know, there's nothing more powerful than a government that doesn't want rising food prices. So the fact that if Australia got one incursion and contained it and then isolated the property, isolated the area, but wanted to keep trading with countries that were willing to take the product, then I think maybe I'm naive in thinking it would be quite quick, but I don't think it'd be years for sure. I think it'd be months before countries would start saying, well, we can't afford these high food prices, particularly around a mainstream protein like red meat.
What countries do you think may take our meat?
Well, there's four large countries that are four main markets for Australian beef, and obviously China, South Korea, Japan, and the USA. USA takes that hamburger manufacturing beef. USA's foot and mouth disease free, and they'd want to keep it out because the virus lives on the raw meat. It doesn't live on cooked meat. Japan's the same. It's foot and mouth disease free. But South Korea and China have foot and mouth disease. And they may decide that there's an economic benefit of opening the trade, knowing Australia's had an incursion. The depth of that incursion could be the determining factor, but I do think that neither one of those countries would want to cut their supply of red meat from Australia overnight, because they'd know the economic impacts of such a closure of a market like Australia.
Okay, let's look at what's at stake here, because the numbers I've got in terms of our export market, there's 24.7 million beef cattle in Australia. They're valued at $20.2 billion. 70% of that is exported. Sheep, 65.8 million, valued at $5.3 billion. Mutton, 95% exported. 65% lamb. pigs, 2.4 million pigs in Australia valued at 5.3 billion. The export market adds up to, on my figures, $30.8 billion. It employs about 225,000 people, and those three areas support 45,700 agricultural businesses. There's a lot at risk, isn't there?
And you're absolutely right. But again, I think the Australian industry, you know, with some credit, should be given credit for knowing that this is the biggest risk to our industry, and having in place things like livestock traceability to manage your way out of this situation. But the other point I make here is that that frontline border security, and there will always be situations where it can always be done better. But that frontline of ensuring the disease doesn't get into the country is the first fact. And the industry has gone up to Indonesia. They're offering vaccinations. They're offering support. Because that's one way of the risk strategy around managing the risk is to help Indonesia become foot and mouth disease free, be it through vaccination or any other process Indonesia wants to follow to do it. But this is a huge impact on the Australian economy if the disease got into Australia. It's not here at the moment. I'm sure every day at airports there's uncooked meat that's found, etc. But that has meant that for Australia's production history, we haven't had foot and mouth disease. And this is, unfortunately, a time of high risk because it's so close.
Okay, so if we've got this risk of $30.8 billion in export revenue stopping overnight, some economists have said that it's $80 billion would be the effect on the economy if we were to get foot and mouth and the export industry was to close down. So if they've got 1.4 million Australian tourists going to Bali every year and they spend $1.8 billion in Bali, wouldn't it be quicker and more economic for us to say no more tourist trade to Bali and Indonesia, here's $1.8 billion in your bank account, we'll compensate you?
Well, I think you're overplaying my position in the industry if you think I could say what should be done in that situation. As the Prime Minister has said, that they're not going to try and close tourism with Bali. So that's really, other than playing hypotheticals, that decision's been made.
But wouldn't you say that was a pretty good insurance policy? $1.8 million in exchange for guaranteeing $80 billion.
Well, The situation there is that Indonesia, for a long, long time, has been a major trading partner of Australia, of Australian wheat and Australian beef. It's our number one live export destination for beef. So, you know, you're talking about, okay, you can put it in economic sense of $80 billion versus $1.8 billion or relationships in trade. I still think that the strategy of going to Indonesia and helping them manage the disease, be whether or not through vaccination, giving them, as I know, industry's gone up and given them yards to help them contain cattle while they're vaccinated, or going island by island and eliminating cattle and replacing cattle. All those sort of strategies have been considered by industry and will be considered. But it's you know, that is, from the economic point of view, a rational discussion versus the government's decision. So you can probably make your own mind up about what's the best rational decision to make, but the decision is made that they're not going to close the trade. So now it's around the biosecurity at airports and what industry would do if the situation occurred.
What do you think could change at airports specifically to prevent it?
Well, again, you know, listening to various commentaries made, it's again about communication to people. I honestly think the Australian public, no one would bring this disease into this country deliberately. And the Australians, well-informed Australians, would do their level best to comply. So on planes on the way back, in airports, you know, text messages that I got through COVID around COVID being sent to anyone that's in Indonesia on an Australian airline coming home or going back, being told that foot and mouth disease is something that would impact their daily lives if it occurred in Australia, please do everything within your powers to ensure you don't bring it back to Australia. If you do come back to Australia, don't go on an Australian farm for a good 2 weeks. If you're in Indonesia, don't go near cattle or don't go to agricultural areas. Given now that the government said it's not going to close the borders, they're the type of messaging, or that's the type of messaging that should be going to any tourists.
I think a lot of tourists, there's a vet, please correct me when I get his name wrong, Ross Ainsworth, who lives in Bali, is that true? And he said Bali is just one big farm. So it's pretty difficult if you're a tourist and you're staying in your six-star hotel and you walk down the street to dinner and you walk back, it's pretty difficult to, I'm sure in your own mind you think, well, I'm in a metropolitan area, but it would appear, according to the experts, you're not. It's pretty difficult for them to perceive the risk.
It is. So that's, again, what I'd come back to, sort of the messaging that was coming through at times like COVID. And the messaging going to tourists that are in Bali, you know, if you collect mud, wash it off your boots, wash it off your luggage, be really, really cautious about washing clothes when you come home, washing, if you haven't thrown your shoes out, make sure they're washed, wash down your luggage, don't go on an Australian farm for some time after arriving back into Australia. And I think an informed Australia, I mean, look how compliant Australia were compared to some other parts of the world around COVID. Yeah, we as a nation, this is a critical time. But it's not just now. It's going to be a critical time for 2 to 3 years. It's not going to go away in a short period of time. So it's just consistent messaging to those tourists and ask them to do the right thing.
Why are you saying 2 to 3 years? What gives you that framework of time?
It's going to take some... Indonesia's now got foot and mouth disease. And we've just gone through how easily it is spread. So it's going to take some time for a nation like Indonesia to vaccinate its way out of it and do a containment program. I suppose one of the lucky things about Indonesia, it's so many small islands that it could go through that sort of process. But as the Australian industry has done, the Australian government has done, it's offered to help Indonesia. And I think as time goes on, that is our greatest line of defence, is eradicating and help in Indonesia at least get it under control by vaccination.
Okay, so vaccination's the key. There's this quandary that I have heard that if Australia keeps vaccine on shore to protect our own animals, that is an admission that we have foot and mouth disease and therefore export stops.
Well, that's the way the current health protocols are written and the current status of foot and mouth protocols around the world. As I said, the three categories: free of foot and mouth disease, contained with vaccination, or no status recorded around foot and mouth disease by country. So if you don't have it, why would you have the vaccine? That's the theory. Now, again, I'm coming back to the fact that if we did get an incursion, that doesn't mean that the authorities would immediately go, well, let's bring in the vaccination. Because if we did get the disease, with the systems in place in Australia around containment and destroying those animals may be the best thing to do. They may decide not to bring in the vaccine because it's contained.
You haven't convinced me that by not keeping a stock of millions and millions and millions of vials of vaccine on shore in a secure location so that we can cope with an outbreak or prevent an outbreak, that shouldn't penalise us.
Well, and again, I'd love to be able to tell you that I agree or disagree, but it's just the way it is. Okay. Around foot and mouth disease and the admission of having foot and mouth disease and the vaccine in country. We do have a bank, from what I've read, of 1 million vaccines ready to go that is held in the UK and could be here in 7 days. But if you can contain the situation and then you've contained it and there's no further outbreaks after 30 days, then you are back to appealing that we're foot and mouth disease free. And that is a really reasonable scenario to say that Australia could achieve. If you've got all that vaccine in the country, you know, is the way the health protocols are written, then you are then have to prove that you're foot and mouth disease free without the use of vaccine.
Doesn't make sense to me.
It may not make sense, but that's the way the health protocols are written, and that's the way it is. But again, I think it comes back to probably explaining the situation of what might occur. Someone would have to have foot and mouth disease on them, and maybe has to come home and go out and deliberately pat a pig. The pig gets it, and then you move to containment if the disease is picked up from that pig. And Australia's, again, I come back to it, that unlike any other country that I've seen in the world, has the best chance of any nation of containing it.
All right. You still haven't convinced me. We've got nearly 100 million head of cattle, from the numbers that I've got, to stick a needle in all of them to vaccinate them for this so that we never got the disease.
Again, coming back to the vaccination program would only ever be 80%, would only ever cover 80%, a bit like COVID, I suppose. Yep. There's different viruses, so you identify the virus. It's not whether we think it's right or wrong to have the vaccinations in the country. It could well be the best decision to have 50 million vaccines in the country ready to vaccinate, but then you lose your status to the markets. And I know you would question, well, why would that be? That is the way it is at the moment with the health protocols to our importing nations.
Who are writing the health protocols? Is there a worldwide governing body, association? Tell me how...
Well, each country decides what their health protocols are. It's the same as hormonal growth promotants. We, in our major export markets, will take hormonal growth promotants. Some countries won't, because that's their decision. Where there's no scientific evidence that hormonal growth promotants in beef have any impact on human health at all. But, each individual country can follow world guidelines around foot and mouth disease. And the guidelines are at the moment that if you've got vaccine, then you've probably got the disease. And it is black and white as that. And we can argue about that all day long, but that's just the way it is. But again, I keep coming back to that the process, if Australia got it, vaccine may not be the strategy to address it.
Okay. Let's look at some scenarios now that if we did get it, what the consequences are. First of all, on an overall situation. So we get some cases, we do our very best to stop it, but then these protocols kick in and our export market stops unless we can negotiate with countries that already have foot and mouth disease to take our product, but it would appear that would take some degree of time. And so the dramatic headline effect is foot and mouth discovered in wherever, export market stops, so that's $30.8 billion that just stops overnight. Let me run through what I think, correct me as I go along. You'd have a whole lot of farmers going, I can't export, I've got to sell the cattle that I would have usually sold for export that are fit and healthy and don't have foot and mouth, I can only now sell them in Australia. All of a sudden, our meat processors are going to be incredibly overloaded with people selling their cattle, otherwise they would have sold overseas. Those processors with COVID and lack of labour aren't going to be able to process it. The domestic market has an oversupply of meat. That would force the price down substantially. There'd be a whole lot of people going into their supermarkets going, gee, this is okay. I thought foot and mouth was going to be a problem. My steak's half the price. There would be an abundance of meat. I'm not sure in the short term or the medium term or how long before that begins to trail off. And we've got overseas markets in the meantime, such as the US, that will be picking up our export market from other countries. Is that a realistic viewpoint?
That is true. There is no doubt that in the global markets, the price of beef, as much as it falls here in Australia, would spike globally. I think the fact is that a lot of those countries would go, well, beef's just spiked dramatically, because even though Australia's one of the smallest producers of beef in the world, it's in the top three, I think, of exporters in the world of red meat. So the world needs our meat. So again, it had come back to that containment on farm, mm-hmm. and Australia would be transparent about, okay, we've contained it. Mm-hmm. And this is what we've got in place now to contain it. 98% of the rest of the beef that is still being produced in Australia is FMD free. But yes, we've got one case of FMD in the country, and this is how we're containing it. If there were further outbreaks, it'd be a real issue. But if we contained it, again, which I'm quite comfortable that we could do as a mm-hmm. nation, I think those export countries would bring forward the discussions about when they would start taking our export beef product again. But what you say is absolutely correct. There would be a lot of meat that would need to come back onto the domestic market. But again, if the domestic market fell by a percentage points, don't worry, the global market would increase. Because the production globally of red meat, both lamb, mutton and beef, is quite low at the moment.
Okay, but if I'm looking at 70% of our production, and even if it takes 1, 2, 3 months of negotiation overseas to change protocols and get them to take it, you're still in the short term going to have supermarket shelves full of meat at a lot cheaper prices. That's directly against what Barnaby Joyce quoted the other day when I heard him say, there will be no meat on the shelves.
Well, that would be the situation if the whole of Australia got FMD. If it arrived in Australia and it took off before we could contain it as an industry. And I'm sitting here as a former managing director of Meat and Livestock Australia saying I've seen enough from industry to I would be flabbergasted if that happened. I think is farmers that pick it up and recognise that they've got the disease get compensated.
Yep.
So they're not going to get financial harm by saying, okay, I've got it. Industry's put that out there to industry, that don't be afraid to say if you have got it, because you're going to get compensated. The issue here is containment. So that would be the situation, that if the whole of Australia got it, then and we couldn't contain it, and animals were destroyed everywhere.
Who's our number one market for beef export?
Well, China has been.
That's a foot and mouth.
That is, that's
so,
correct.
So if we're quick on the feet and we want to hold hands with them and they want to do a deal, that may be saved.
That could be saved. It's a situation where both nations have to work very closely together to get that situation resolved.
Second biggest export market?
Well, then you're coming back to fluctuations in the market, but mainly the USA takes our manufacturing beef, mm-hmm. then Japan, and then South Korea.
Okay, those three, who's likely to say yes, no, or I want to hold hands?
Well, I think South Korea buys an enormous amount of Australian beef, and their status is unknown around foot and mouth disease. So they're similar to China, being so close. So they may well as well. But then Indonesia is a huge consumer of beef as well. And we're not sending live cattle there at the moment. We might have to find another way of getting beef to help out Indonesia as well. But I don't want to, I just think that, governments can become very motivated when all of a sudden there's a huge spike in any food that they need as a stable part of their economy. Red meat is a stable part of the Indonesian economy, as it is particularly in South Korea. So China, they've got such a huge population to feed. A spike in meat prices globally, which is what would occur if this happens in Australia, mm-hmm. Would be something I suspect most governments would want to address.
Who addresses the conversations with the individual countries about, well, we've got it in Australia, but we'd like you still to buy it from us? Is that a government situation, or is that a private industry situation?
No, it's the Minister of Trade, the Minister of Agriculture. I suspect even the Prime Minister would probably even be involved in those sort of level of discussions.
Okay, so it's not your individual cattle exporters going, picking up the phone to their counterpart in Korea or whatever and going, okay, look.
Well, I'm sure they would. And I'm sure they'd be telling him that it's happened, it's contained in an area. The rest of it, at the moment, whilst it's contained and will be contained and there's no further outbreaks, they'd be communicating, you need to be lobbying your government to start taking our beef again.
Okay. You're painting a very... What we're seeing so far in the foot and mouth disease debate is very black and white in the media. You're painting that there are 256 shades of grey between black and white.
It's like any situation. It's risk management 101. And I can't predict the future, but any listed company that I've worked for or any entity that I've worked for that has a risk register decides what's number one. Now, maybe foot and mouth disease in a lot of these entities was 6, 7, and 8. Now it's number one. And as number one, you'd have situations that would occur if there was an outbreak, and these are the mitigating things that you would do. And I'm sure the Australian government and the partner of agriculture and industry have these scenarios well and truly played out about what they would do.
You've been involved at the highest levels. Do you have confidence that they can execute those responsibilities quickly and professionally?
I do, because having been in the industry, I have been part of two foot and mouth scenarios that involved government and the whole of industry, and did a mock scenario of a foot and mouth outbreak. And it was quite catastrophic in its being involved in it, because when we did the mock scenarios, we didn't know whether it was real or not. We didn't know it was a mock scenario that we were being involved in. And there's numerous ways around how risk companies do that sort of scenario planning. But it was a real wake-up call to all of us around how we need to have a really precise way of making decisions and an effective plan for communication and what happens next.
Is that situation you're talking about in any way affected by a change of government?
No, because it's mostly held within the departments and within industry and the state governments as well. So it's all levels of government. No, I don't think it is impacted by a change of government.
Okay. Now, let's one more scenario. Let's take this down to the farm operation level. Again, let me go through this scenario. Correct me when I get it right or wrong. So we have a farm or some farms that are hit by foot and mouth disease. They have to destroy their herd. That farm therefore has no future cash flow. They've got farm costs to try and maintain, fixed farm costs. They've got no income coming in. We've got rising interest rates, so their interest bill is going up. Maybe they borrowed quite a bit of money recently to restock their herd after the drought. So there's a huge financial pressure. Maybe some of the banks then want to reduce their exposure. They start getting worried. We start having some fire sales of, well, not just the cattle, but also maybe the farms, because there's no cash flow left there, no breeding stock left there. And we start to see farms sold. Maybe that affects the value of agricultural property.
So as I mentioned before, if on the farm I'm on had a foot and mouth disease outbreak and all the animals had to be destroyed, there is a well-documented industry compensation plan in place. Government pays some, federal government pays some, state government pays some, and industry pays some of percentages of that compensation.
Okay.
So it's well documented that any animal destroyed, you'd be compensated for as a farmer. So that would stop a free fall in all economics, like value of properties, cash flow, etc.
That hasn't come out. People haven't been discussing that.
Well, it's been discussed in some of the industry talking sessions I've been involved with, and I think probably it hasn't come out in mainstream media because it is, it's an outcome of the worst case scenario. And that is that we're on-farm destroying animals under foot and mouth in Australia, which again, I think most of the discussion's been around, well, let's stop it getting here in the first place.
Okay, so what you're saying then is we've got fantastic processes in place to prevent it. We've got fantastic processes in place that if we got it to minimise it, and even if there is, it does appear, we've got great processes to compensate in there. So maybe this $80 billion economic effect that is being floated is a wild exaggeration.
No, it would all depend on whether the outbreak could be contained. You used the word fantastic quite a few times there. Nothing about this whole situation is fantastic. What I'm saying is that what I don't think has been painted is the readiness of industry to manage these situations of any outbreak of disease, foot and mouth or any other disease that comes to Australia, because it's been something that we've held in our global markets as a selling point for so long. But what I am saying is that if it couldn't be contained, then yes, $80 billion is actually over a period of time, but it certainly would be $80 billion. Everything you spoke about would eventuate. There'd be collapsing rural property values, collapses all over the place if we couldn't contain it once it hit Australia. But I'm saying I've worked in industry. Mm. I've seen industry's investment in why else would you have, it's a wonderful selling point in our global markets that we have full lifetime traceabilities of our beef cattle. Victoria's had it for sheep now for a number of years, and the rest of Australia is about to adopt sheep lifetime traceability. Now, it's not only the fact that we can tell our global customers that every animal has lifetime traceability, but the fact that if we got a disease outbreak, like I said around anthrax, in Victoria when it happens, that property is closed down, surrounding properties are closed down, but the rest of the state keeps trading once it's determined where the animals are. So we have had practice in these situations, but the $80 billion would absolutely be the situation if there was multiple outbreaks of foot and mouth disease throughout Australia. I'm not trying to play it down. I'm also not trying to scaremonger. I'm trying to tell the facts. And the facts are that this industry is a very complex industry that's had sophisticated people investing in systems to ensure that we contain it if it did get here.
Okay, you now have to take the Bergenomics test, Richard. This is a very serious subject, and it's not to trivialise it by saying what will the effect of foot and mouth disease if it came into Australia be on a hamburger, but we have used this test certainly with the war in Ukraine in terms of the effects that it's had on hamburger production and pricing. If we get foot and mouth in Australia, what do you think the effects would be on the simple, common, suburban hamburger?
Well, your hamburger's going, hamburger meat is going to be significantly cheaper for a maximum of 12 months, because I'm saying that if we did get foot and mouth disease in this country, that this country had worked pretty close to be either foot and mouth disease within 12 months or by a bare minimum contained with vaccination.
Okay, cheaper hamburgers. Now, the final question. Because this is an economics-styled podcast, what do you see as the role of the economist in helping Australia plan to ensure we don't get foot and mouth, or assist if we did get foot and mouth?
Well, it's around those drivers, isn't it? That what would be the global impact on food prices if Australia got foot and mouth disease and closed its export markets for 12 months? I don't know what that would do to the rise of beef globally or to lamb or mutton globally, but I'm sure it'd have a huge impact. And that impact could drive very significant decisions around what would happen to Australian red meat sales for the 12 months after an incursion occurred. And the counter of that is, as you got to in the start of the podcast, around $1.8 billion in helping Indonesia eradicate foot and mouth disease or get vaccinated versus what it's going to cost us if we got an incursion that we couldn't contain. So that $80 billion is an incursion that we can't contain. Yes, you know, what would be the value of Australia going to Indonesia and saying, if you can't vaccinate, we'll replace. We'll replace the cattle that you have to destroy. Or we'll help you finance cattle from Australia to replace the ones that you have had to destroy because of foot and mouth disease. All those sort of scenario planning that, to the credit of industry, have been more focused on the biosecurity measures at airports and everything else, communicating around what industry is doing. But now everyone's taking a bit of a deep breath. Economists could have a really major role in publishing those sort of well-researched papers around the impacts on global food prices and the impacts of being a friend to Indonesia and helping them get out of this situation.
Okay. Do you, just to round up, do you believe that Indonesia is fully open to the assistance that we would offer them?
And I can only go back to my personal discussions that I've had with industry leaders in Indonesia. They want to feed their people. They don't want to see their people go hungry. And they're a big beef-eating nation. And beef's a major part of their diet. I've always had wonderful relationships, trade relationships, business relationships when I've worked with Indonesia. And it can be attributed to a lot of countries. What you read is not necessarily what happens when you get in meeting rooms. I've found them, they would be with open arms taking any assistance that they can get from Australia. And to a degree, Australia's been there trying to understand how they can help. So I do believe that if Indonesia wanted help, Australia would give it, and they wouldn't have any reservations about asking for it.
Richard, thank you very much for taking the time during this very tense situation to be on the podcast. I think you've covered some great areas that aren't getting out into the media, which is a shame because it would certainly calm the situation. So thanks very much.
Thank you.
My thanks to today's guest, Richard Norton, the ex-CEO of Meat and Livestock Australia. Richard certainly brings out a lot of detail that is not being discussed in today's media about foot and mouth disease in Australia. Here's my key takeaway points. It's most likely it won't be an agricultural Armageddon if foot and mouth disease appears in Australia. Richard tells us the relevant authorities have been prepared and in fact rehearsed for a foot and mouth outbreak for a long time. Australia has a best practice farm and cattle identification system that would allow for instant containment of the disease, preventing it from spreading if it were to arrive in Australia. Richard outlined some of our largest overseas export markets already have foot and mouth disease. He believes they are reliant on our meat for their protein supply. So with careful negotiation, those countries may continue to buy our export meat in the event of an outbreak in Australia. The current source of foot and mouth disease is Indonesia, one of Australia's closest trading partners and buyers of meat. It's not in Indonesia or Australia's short or long-term interest if we closed our border with Indonesia. Richard knows we can help them effectively vaccinate their herds to alleviate the threat in a relatively short period of time. So, foot and mouth disease is a potential problem, but a problem that shouldn't be sensationalised. I'd like to thank my friend Peter Homan, National Livestock Manager of Elders, who was instrumental in this podcast, and Ology Creative, the brains behind the design elements of Bergenomics. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the Bergenomics podcast and pass it on to others who you think may enjoy the demystification of economics. Thanks for listening.